Good morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. The purpose of this lodge and any of the lodges around the world is to disseminate these fundamental ideas that the whole philosophy rests on. And it's interesting because this is very germane to our meeting today, because that's basically what we're going to be talking about, is the ancient ideas that have come down through the ages. And the basis, as the Declaration says, the basis for union among all theosophists is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And these teachings are focused on this idea of universal brotherhood. And anyone can be a theosophist as long as that is their goal and their aim, is that idea of universal brotherhood. As the Declaration states, the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And the last quote that's here on the Declaration, again, really fulfills a major tenet of our class today. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, the way this lodge does disseminate these ideas is by having two meetings a week. And if you notice, though, for next month, we will not be having any Sunday classes just for the month of August, but we will still be having our classes on Wednesday night. So for next Sunday, we'll be looking at the idea of magic. And all these ideas for our Sunday classes are from Isis Unveiled. And you'll find the readings for that day and the next week out in the lobby. On Wednesdays, and the Sunday meetings start at 11 and run until 12. The doors open at 10:30. On Wednesdays, the library is open from 5:30 until 7:30, and there's a student available if one wishes to have some information on an independent study, as well as the readings for that night's class. The book table is open before and after all meetings. And we just sell straight-line theosophical literature, and the library is only a reference library. On Wednesdays, the doors open at 5:30. The meeting starts at 7:45 and runs until 9. And we are we're using the notes on the Bhagavad Gita by William Q. Judge. We're going to be looking at his notes on the Gita, and we'll be looking at portions of the Bhagavad Gita itself as references for that class. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So, as we said, today we're going to be looking at some of the early sources of this wisdom religion that the philosophy is basically composed of. And we'll be looking at the idea of from early on, back in the ages, up until now, see where we've come. So we will have two volunteers read the part for today.
We can assert with entire plausibility that there is not one of all these sects, Kabbalism, Judaism, and now present Christianity included, but sprung from the two main branches of that one mother trunk, the once universal religion, which antedated the Vedic ages. We speak of that prehistoric Buddhism, which merged later into Brahmanism. The religion which the primitive teaching of the early few apostles most resembled, a religion preached by Jesus himself, is the elder of these two, Buddhism. The latter is taught in its primitive purity and carried to perfection by the last of the Buddhas, Gautama, based its moral ethics on three fundamental principles. It alleged that, one, everything existing exists from natural causes, two, that virtue brings its own reward and vice and sin their own punishment, and three, that the state of man in this world is probationary. We might add that on these three principles rested the universal foundation of every religious creed: God and individual immortality for every man, if he could but win it. However puzzling the subsequent theological tenets, however seemingly incomprehensible metaphysical abstractions which have convulsed the theology of every one of the great religions of mankind, as soon as it was placed on a sure footing, the above is found to be the essence of every religious philosophy, with the exception of later Christianity. It was that of Zoroaster, of Pythagoras, of Plato, of Jesus, and even of Moses, only the teachings of a Jewish lawgiver have been so piously tampered with.
Our examination of the multitudinous religious faiths that mankind, early and late, have professed, most assuredly indicates that they have all been derived from one primitive source. It would seem as if they were all but different modes of expressing the yearning of the imprisoned human soul for intercourse with supernal spheres. As the white ray of light is decomposed by the prism into the various colors of the solar spectrum, so the beam of divine truth, in passing through the three-sided prism of man's nature, has been broken up into vari-colored fragments called religions. And, as the rays of the spectrum, by imperceptible shadings, merge into each other, so the great theologies that have appeared at different degrees of divergence from the original source have been connected by major schisms, schools, and offshoots from the one side or the other. Combined, their aggregate represents one eternal truth. Separate, they are but shades of human error and the signs of imperfection. The worship of the Vedic Petris is fast becoming the worship of the spiritual portion of mankind. It but needs the right perception of things objective to finally discover that the only world of reality is the subjective. What has been contemptuously termed paganism was ancient wisdom replete with deity, and Judaism and its offspring, Christianity and Islamism, derived whatever of inspiration they contained from this ethnic parent. Pre-Vedic Brahmanism and Buddhism are the double source from which all religions sprung. Nirvana is the ocean to which all tend. For the purposes of a philosophical analysis, we need not take account of the enormities which have blackened the record of many of the world's religions. True faith is the embodiment of divine charity. Those who minister at its altars are but human, As we turn the blood-stained pages of ecclesiastical history, we find that whoever may have been the hero and whatever costumes the actors may have worn, the plot of the tragedy has ever been the same. But the eternal night was in and behind all, and we pass from what we see to that which is invisible to the eye of sense. Our fervent wish has been to show true souls how they may lift aside the curtain, and in the brightness of that night made day, look with undazzled gaze upon the unveiled truth.
And we want to just add just a little bit that the last two pages, 639 and 640, is the last two pages of ISIS itself. So we will take any questions. This is a very broad topic, so we'll try and see what happens here. Yes.
Well, it's always seemed so strange to us that tracing it back, you find there is one source of all these religions, and yet how far apart they all are and how they look on each other with enmity.
Mm-hmm.
It's always seemed strange.
It is, and that is one thing for us, is that we don't understand all that, the friction between so many of the major religions, when in reality we do. It is all from one. And where was it? This is on page 639. Combined, their aggregate represents one eternal truth. Separate, they are but shades of human error and the signs of imperfection. And, I mean, that fits it perfectly there, and we don't think anybody can really answer that question if we're all based on the same ideas. Then why can't we all get along? In the back?
Well, can we lay the blame at priestcraft, which is those trying to gain ascendancy over their and separateness over
mm-hmm.
their fellows?
And about the idea about priestcraft, and we know that back, we think it was the Dark Ages, the priests were the ones that had all the education, they had all the knowledge, and they just fed the people who were basically, they didn't know how to read, they really didn't know how to think past what their day was going to be on the farm. And the priests definitely were able to remain control over the populace. Yes.
I think the problem that we all have is, I mean, certainly we have seen that religious dogma has been used to control people.
Mm-hmm.
But if we try to go back to the source of that religious dogma and the creed that was set up around it, we may find they were very sincere people who just misinterpreted and believed something that really wasn't so. So when we talk about priestcraft, we're certainly not judging individual priests or individuals who might have been the leader of something. We may not like their results, but we're not judging them.
Right, and Theosophy speaks so much about one's motive, and we can see here where maybe some of those priests had, and when we say priests, we're not speaking just of Catholicism. We're speaking of Protestants and Islam and anybody who is in charge of that particular religion as a priest. And we're not just looking at Catholicism. But we know that motive holds true to what somebody is wanting to do. And if that motive is based on erroneous knowledge, we see what has happened. I mean, these people may have been very good and had the best motive to help their people, but if that idea was based on erroneous knowledge, then we can kind of see what happens down the road. Yes?
But isn't it true that religion begins to put their trust in a God that is outside of oneself? There's the seed of great conflict. And it's rather ironic that the very root of all this is dualistic, which mm-hmm. does not teach that, and how it's been perverted by a priestcraft. Mm-hmm.
And we would put to the group today, because a question just came up in our mind and we're not really sure what the answer would be. When can we look at the idea of priestcraft coming in? Because we know that, as was just said, Buddhism teaches an internal spirituality. So when did it turn outward? So we were just wondering if, yes.
Well, from a little bit of reading, we see something happening during the time of Plato, Melicus, Plotinus, and then when all the mystery schools had fled and went underground, is when we became worshiping that which was around us, not what was in us, because
okay.
those teachings have gone on the ground to protect them.
Yes, thank you.
There's also the fact that if you go backwards in the history of India, there's a lot of pre-Vedic mention in here. The caste system went from a natural karmic result of the individual's growth in previous lives to a status symbol. So someone could be a Brahmin and not really have spiritual values. So it became a question of almost vanity and superiority. And once you do that, there is no deity within mm-hmm. if you're not part of my class. So that whole idea is really very, very old and has been built upon. Probably we started it in Atlantis.
And we also have to look at the idea that we're in the dark ages of our development, the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age. So things are very upside down, very materialistic. So we're looking at that idea as being mixed in with all of this as well. Yes.
Aboriginal religions, the primitive religions of the various aborigines on different continents, they had religions which had the wholeness. They did not have that God is out there or the gods are out there, and the priest is an intermediary between God and people. They had this wholeness, and in many cases, it was more or less exterminated when the Western religions came in. That's very...
Something to go along with that, with the idea that a lot of the native groups on all the continents had this idea of a wholeness philosophy. They were also very much looking at the cycles of nature, which theosophy has brought forward from these ancient ideas to look at cycles, because the ancient tribes, and even up until the 1800s, they were looking at what cycle in regards to rain, snow, summer, winter, all of that. So they were in tune with cycles, and we are encouraged to be that way as well. Yes.
You said we are in the dark ages. We're just in the dark age. I hope there's not, there's periodically come. And that, and it's called the Iron Age. It's mm-hmm. hard. As you said, that which is up is down, that which is down is up. And a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in the teachings you will find reference to the fact that it will be needed in the coming ages to propagate these truths. So, I think that this is just a part of that long process.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Yes.
The last page, the last paragraph, for the purposes of a philosophical analysis, that's one sentence. And it states here that the night was hidden behind the hall, and we passed from what we see to that which is invisible to the eyes of sense. And then what comes to mind, independent devotion. What we're learning here in these rooms is to think, and we can only think by passing within ourselves.
A little louder, please.
We can only think by going inside of ourselves. And it's saying here that night becomes day when you begin to think on these ideas and not base our conclusions on the eye of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to tie in with the statement, the night lodges chaos, of this independent devotion
mm-hmm.
to what is meant by independent.
So what is meant by independent devotion? The independent devotion means that even though we are coming here as a group, we're sharing ideas, we're asking questions, we're discussing these ideas, but it doesn't end there. It shouldn't end as we walk out the door. We need to put it into our lives and look at universal brotherhood and love for humanity and helping those that are unfortunate. And it's also, when we talk about independent study, is studying when we get home. And Mr. Judge talks about not reading, which we can't remember the term he used, but we need to read high quality ideas. And if it's not different kinds of philosophies or whatnot, that we're not reading books about that have violence and that kind of thing in it, because it will tend to keep our minds from looking at the higher. And one of the things about the sentence that was just quoted, but the eternal night was in and beyond all, and we pass from what we see to that which is invisible to the eye of sense. And we really thought about that. And what we came up with was this was a beautiful way of expressing the idea of our evolution, that we go from the outward sense and pulling to the inward, where it says, see that which is invisible to the eye of sense, because we know that the astral contains those senses that are spiritual, and that most of the time, in this our stage of evolution, we are looking through that physical eye. And the whole idea with evolution is to pull ourselves more inward and begin to use those astral senses. But that is part of our evolutionary journey. And we just thought, if anybody else wants to comment on that, we just thought that was a beautiful way of expressing it, about the eternal night, that we are spiritually in a dark phase now, as if it was eternal light, and we're looking to bring more of that brightness into us. Yes.
Well,
in discussing that dark age, we need to point to our Wednesday night classes in the Gita, because the Kali Yuga started with the death of Krishna 5,115 years ago, something like that. And the teachings of the Gita were his gift to us as survival tools for this period. We're told in the philosophy, yes, it's dark and fast moving, but that means that we can do more in a short period of time if we're looking within for the light instead of outside.
Yes, we're actually being, believe it or not, we're actually being given a gift that we can move quicker along our evolution by focusing inward and looking to help others, to help bring up the lower kingdoms. Yes?
A few classes back, the subject was the power of meditation,
mm-hmm.
and how it dissipates karma, and we never really looked at it in that sense before, but
mm-hmm.
that first of all, concentrating and then meditating is a habit that said that we need to do daily.
Yes, that was an interesting idea too, how meditation will dissipate karma. And it is important that we do, the philosophy talks about having a quiet time first thing in the morning and if possible before we go to bed to review the day and see where we can make improvements. Because, again, we're looking back at Buddha, and he's talking about the middle path, and that way we're not being too down, we're not being too up, that we're looking at life, not only ourselves, but all of life in a more dispassionate way. That we can certainly be concerned and upset at what we see that's going on, but we can't let it interfere with what it is our duty is. Yes?
We have a sincere concern with the expression meditation dissipates karma, almost like it makes it magically disappear. We completely disagree with that. It's the assumption. How can it possibly happen? Karma is karma. Meditation doesn't make karma go away.
The idea with karma, though, with meditation, is that as we meditate on these higher ideas, we can therefore function in a more spiritual manner. We can see where our, you know, what we are doing and how it affects our karma. We're not talking about wiping it out, but we can change our ideas. And as the duty comes to us, if we've been trying to be focused and not being too emotional about things, that we can make better choices when that duty comes to us, we can make a right decision. And thus, in that way, we can look at how our karma is going to react to that. Yes?
Can we perhaps say that meditation mitigates karma? By being in the right frame of mind, when it comes to us, we look at it differently.
Mm-hmm.
We look at it as a lesson to be learned rather than as a punishment. So meditation would mitigate karma rather than dissipate. It's not going to dissipate. It's still going to come to us.
Yes. Yes. We guess we use the wrong term. Unfortunately, English does things like that.
Sure. So then just to put it in words, we're thinking, so then if we meditate, then we're putting ourselves in a position where we can probably more clearly see what's going on and react to the karma in a healthier way,
mm-hmm.
to reharmonize what was said. But we don't just maybe go away.
No.
Like
No, no, we can never make karma go away. Yes, in the back.
I think all we have to add is one word. Meditation alters me and my thinking. Altering my thinking alters my karma. It may not happen right away. It may take quite a while. But the fact that I have shifted, that I'm changing my motives, has a direct effect on mitigating and dissipating karma. So we just have to add the word me.
Yes, our motive is so much of how we act and what we do. And we know that thinking, our thoughts, our feelings all have power behind them. So even if we're acting in a, you know, in what appears to be a positive manner, if we're doing it for the wrong reason, then it, you might as well not have acted at all. In the back?
Yeah, it says that the Buddhists had three fundamental principles.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is obviously the definition of karma. And virtue brings its own reward, and vice and sin their own punishment. It's definitely the definition of karma, and also the golden rule.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it was interesting, a couple classes back, we had the golden rule in a lot of the different religions, and it was very interesting that they, you know, in just phrasing it in different ways, they all said the same thing. So it's obvious then that there is a common denominator to all these religions. And when somebody asks us, well, what is theosophy? What is this that you're doing? And we tell them, theosophy is known as the wisdom religion, and if you take back all the major religions to their essence, before all the trappings of modern religion has been almost encircled them, and they can't really bloom anymore, that this is what theosophy is the basis of all religions. Yes?
Well, then, what we're being provided with in this room is a scepter. And most of us bombarded every day by television, the internet, our family, religions, and friends, and so forth. We have no way of knowing what is real and unreal. So we think that what we're introduced to this new world is a sifter that we can take with us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come up against all of this stuff we hear, so those three fundamental ideas and independence emotion,
mm-hmm.
that we are thinkers and that we no longer want to go by what we hear, or even what we psychically see ourselves. We need a scepter of some kind. How do we go about putting things in order so that we do step by step? And we know that on Wednesdays we have the Gita,
mm-hmm.
but is there anything available to show us what the principles are that we begin with first?
So the principles of the philosophy of theosophy, again, we're looking at what was just said. We're looking at the idea of independent devotion. And we have so much literature out there that it's really hard to say which is the best one to start with. But when we're looking at the idea of sifting, and what do we do to kind of put things in perspective for us when we're out in the world? What can we take with us? One of the ideas the philosophy has is that what is going on here now is not real. It's false. And when we think of, it took us a while to understand that, because I'm touching this table, how can it not be real? Well, it is transient in that at some point in time, it is going to dissolve. It'll go back to its, go back into the earth, go back into the ground. Whereas what is real is what is inside us. And we are all the same. We have that free will of choice. We can make decisions. We can think to ourselves, well, if I do this, how is this going to affect other people? If I run this red light, will I hit somebody? So we can make decisions based upon what the outcomes might be. And the Bhagavad Gita is such a wonderful help, because what is said in there, and we can look at these three fundamentals from Buddhism that we see on page 124, that we have these ideas and we can make these decisions based on knowledge, you know, true knowledge. And it's just to know that since we are all one, that even the lower kingdoms, even though they may not be self-conscious, they are all conscious to some degree at their own level. And by knowing that and understanding that, that can help us make decisions upon, you know, if somebody's first coming in, just knowing that we're all one, that if one is hurt, everybody in some way, shape, or form, it's that little ripple when you throw a pebble in a pond, you know, it goes. Yes?
We think if everyone realized that statement that was just mentioned, that is equivalent to karma, number two of those principles.
Mm-hmm. You want me to read that?
Yeah.
That virtue brings its own reward, and vice and sin their own punishment.
If people of any religion really believed and understood that, three quarters of the world would be mm-hmm. in peace right now, and people would be taking steps to grow and therefore to help mm-hmm. each other. We think it's the most important idea that humanity needs. Forget reincarnation. That would come along just by thinking about karma.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I can't, in this body, in these circumstances, reap everything I have sown, obviously I have to come back again. So it becomes an expression of how karma works. If people understood that principle,
mm-hmm.
everything would change.
It's a big if. But that is true. If we had that idea about karma and not the one life idea, it would, because people now that believe in the one life, it's, you know, we have to get all we can now, which definitely affects how things are going to react in the world. But definitely if more people understood karma, and I think people are afraid to believe in karma. We have had discussions with people about it. And it was interesting, one person we spoke with believed in karma but didn't believe in reincarnation. She believed that karma affected her in this life and in this life only. It's almost where we can say that karma and reincarnation is a gift to us. Some people are totally afraid that, you know, they don't want to live another life. They don't understand that you're being given another chance to rectify things. Yes?
Well, I understand that completely. Knowing my own nature, as little as I do, I have very volatile feelings sometimes. I'm sure I've done many, many terrible things, and I'm awaiting the results. The other side of that is, though, if I'm entitled to these ideas here and now, I've done many not terrible things too. So I have both to look forward to, more opportunities to grow and chances to pay off debts.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the possibilities outweighs any fear. And besides that, simply say to someone with that fear, you can't change the fact that you're a spiritual being, no matter what you have ever done. you will pay and then go on from there.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
And we should always keep in mind, when we use the term karma, it means the law, universal law. What we sow, we reap. If we work 40 hours a week, we expect our pay by law. So,
and
let's go from there and
yeah.
understand that it isn't very much forever for us to get an idea of the meaning of universal love,
mm-hmm.
which means the sun and all of us. So we can't use the perception from that bicolor
world.
It's the law. You're stuck if you
mm-hmm.
use it that way. But we use it in the universal term. Then we see that is what moves everything in the universe. So we need to know how to cooperate
mm-hmm.
with nature.
What's interesting is maybe trying to rephrase karma and not use the word. And initially, Mr. Crosby in his Eternal Verities, once you begin to realize his style of writing, all his chapters in that book, he's outlining the three fundamentals, but he doesn't actually say, this is the first fundamental, second fundamental. He weaves it all together, and it's a very non-judgmental, non-threatening way of teaching the fundamentals. Yes.
Well, with respect to karma and different religions, between Christianity and Islam, there are Hindu sects and there are also Buddhistic sects that are every bit as dogmatic as the most
mm-hmm.
fundamental Christian whatever. So, if the fact is that everyone is where they are because of their karma, then no priest did that to you. You created the circumstances in which you're that ignorant that you're going to believe these false ideas. Well, what is it that we would do that would cause us to become so ignorant? If ignorance is our next step to not understand this, what is it that we would do to cause such ignorance?
Well, we can't really say what somebody else's karma, what somebody else's life was before this life. And we can only speculate that it must have been something grievous. But we can't really say, we can't predict what somebody's done. But the interesting thing is when you see somebody acting that way, or receiving the awful actions from somebody else, we can look at it dispassionately because we know that karma of the person who is giving out these awful orders and somebody else receiving it, that is their karma, because we don't act alone. We don't act independently. That the people we are born with in the certain area where we're living, there's reasons why we come back together. But we can't say what exactly those reasons are. Yes?
We are a bit confused when we hear the idea that we don't have any individual karma, that it belongs to all. Now, when we equate that with the idea of drawn by self-induced and self-devised
mm-hmm.
methods checked by karma, it would seem that each individual has his own karma based upon his thoughts, acts, and deeds in prior lives. Now, we do not negate the fact that karma comes to us through other people,
mm-hmm.
but we have our own
mm-hmm.
problems, and we can't come out and say, I'm not going to deal with this problem because it belongs to everybody.
That would be nice. But we do have our own individual karma, And those of us that live in the southeastern Pennsylvania, we have a joint karma with everybody who lives here in the state of Pennsylvania, the United States. But it's Mr. Judge in the Ocean talks about all the different types of karma there is. And even though we do have our own, we can't ignore the fact that we're all here together. We are all here in this room because we did something in a past life that has drawn us together to learn and spread these ideas. Yes?
Well, we think that it all has to do, somebody was talking about ignorance. It's the evolutionary process. When we first start in human infancy, we are ignorant. We learn through experience. And the experiences we create or that come to us create the karma that we then have to work out.
Mm-hmm.
So and we are all at different levels of evolution. So there are some people who just cannot accept the concept of reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us, we believe that, as you say, we probably met before. We have been exposed to these ideas,
mm-hmm.
so we can believe this, but other people can't. So it really comes down to finding your own center within this universal brotherhood, where my center merges with the center of, we are all in this together,
mm-hmm.
we're interconnected.
Yes.
But individually, we need to find our center, which poetic meditation is, of course, one of the best methods. And that is how we evolve.
Yes, the whole idea, and we love the phrase, finding the spiritual in the mundane and being in this world, but not of it. So when we look at finding our center and being aware of the interconnectivity of everything, then we can... You know, like Buddha, like we were talking about earlier, Buddha talks about being centered. Then we can find that. And knowing that each and every person has their own issues, their own karma. And, you know, I think we become more understanding and more sympathetic when we know these things. Way in the back.
Earlier it was said about whatever karma you have, it is your doing. And that's absolutely true. But that doesn't take the burden off the parent or the teacher or the priest,
mm-hmm.
who led you to think and accept in a certain way. There is a karma for that individual if they have misled in the sense of knowing better or wanting to feel superior. And we all do it with each other. When we give advice, we should be very, very careful. Granted, the person has to take the advice, but if we've mm-hmm. made them trust us, then we have part of the burden in it. So we're back to the fact that karma is this huge ocean, and we all
mm-hmm.
are partaking of it and in it. And we have to treat everything with respect, even the person we don't respect.
And we can, in regards to what the Bhagavad Gita says about not looking for results of our actions, granted, when we do perform something, we have to be aware of how that's going to affect others. But if we're going to do good for somebody, we look at how that's going to affect this person, but we can't determine what that person is going to do with the suggestions or the help that we're giving them. So we can do the action but not expect the result to be what we are hoping or looking for. And we remember walking down the street, and we had, you know, some food with us, and we saw a homeless person, and we gave it to him, and he looked at it and he goes, "I don't like that." And it just so shocked us, and I said, "Okay, that's all right. Give it to somebody else." But it's things like that we can't really, you know, it's a gift that we're giving somebody, but if they want to re-gift it, they can do that. Yes.
Well, it's interesting that in our churches today, we can't discuss these things individually. And here we can at least ask questions and try. If we look at the clock on the wall, there seem to be three hands, an hour hand, a minute hand, and a second hand. Now, if I take the position of the second hand, I'm not going to move. I feel tired. I'll just stop. Well, the clock, you're deciding that your karma tells you that you're tired and you have to. That's my karma. I'm going to stop. It's impossible. It's the three hands working together on that clock face. And they're all connected, not separately. That's a unified operation. And so it is with universal brotherhood. Sure, I may cut my hand or break my leg. My karma is simply karma. The law does not specify or separate into units. It's a universal law of action and reaction. If you put your hand in the fire, you're going to get burned. Mm-hmm. That's not my karma. That is the law that you will burn. And when you understand this great law and all of nature, then all we need to do is learn how to cooperate as we go along. Mm-hmm. Then things aren't hard. The baton directing the orchestra, I mean, he's, you look at him now and then, but you better know how to play your own instrument.
Right. Thank you. We still have a few more minutes left. But we just find it fascinating when we were reading this, and ISIS really is quite an eye-opener on many, many levels, that so many of these great philosophers, let me see, I'll just read something about Pythagoras. "The key to the Pythagorean dogmas is the general formula of unity in multiplicity." I mean, this is basically what we've been talking about all morning. "The one evolving the many and pervading the many." And one of the things that was in the part was about the one light going through a prism, and there's all these religions. Well, we can also look at it, the one light, that of deity, going through a prism, and there's all of us. So there's that multiplicity that Pythagoras talks about, and the one evolving the many and pervading. Pervading the many, that's the idea of universal brotherhood. "This is the ancient doctrine of emanation in few words. Even the Apostle Paul accepted it as true." And then we're not quite sure what this language is. There's a quote, but it states, "Out of him and through him and in him are all things. And this sounds just like what Krishna was telling Arjuna. This, as we can see by the following quotation, is purely Hindu and Brahmatical. When the disillusion or pralaya had arrived at its term, the great being, Para-Atma or Para-Purusha, the Lord existing through himself, out of whom and through whom all things were and are and will be. And again, we can look at that as being the continuous evolution of the soul, and will be resolved to emanate from his own substance the various creatures. So to us, that's talking about how everything, all the lower kingdoms, man, all the masters, the adepts, we're all this, we all have that essence within us. Anybody have any more questions? Yes.
It says that the teachings of Moses were the same, but they were tampered with. It says so piously tampered with. We think that's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek there.
Well, pious. Oh yeah.
How are they tampered with?
We were thinking about that as well, and we think what they're talking about is the Mosaic law, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So we're not sure if that was what was being referenced or not. If anybody else wants to add to that. Yes?
Well, we think it's just a broad, sweeping statement. It all of it has been piously tampered with, in that people believe in one life and getting revenge on people instead of the golden rule. So everything's kind of turned upside down. And mostly it was done piously.
Yeah, that, right. Yes.
Look at what happened in Christianity when the Roman Empire when Christianity became formalized. Christianity is no longer what Jesus was teaching. It's all put into stone now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we know that Jesus, his teachings were very philosophical in nature, and that he taught reincarnation as well, but it was removed by the priests. So we know what that is. Yes?
And one thing we learn how to develop a sense of responsibility after listening, and when one looks within himself, he slams the door shut and doesn't like what he sees, and may not return to study these ideas. Mm-hmm. When you discover you're responsible, so it gives us a sense of responsibility that we do not have to lash ourselves with a cat and nine tail when we discover how, quote, bad, unquote, we have behaved. So it's a doctrine of hope and responsibility that we developed. And no matter how much education we may have achieved or whatever, humility.
Yes, and we know that some people have this idea, what do they call it, spiritual pride. And we have to be careful about, just thinking that if you don't believe as I do, I'm better than you, kind of an idea, which we know has really wreaked havoc on so much of the world these days. And we're not going to go into politics. Well, the meeting is now done, and we thank everybody for coming.